last week, I want to discuss about something because I feel there is some confusion among some students regarding this giving up of rituals. So I think, I'm not sure, but the feedback I had last week was that many people think that having come to Gita class or come to Gita knowledge, we don't have to do rituals. Or they get confused, should we carry on doing rituals? So in order to find this answer, let's go to the Bhagavad Gita itself. Chapter 18, verse 5, page 306. Chapter 18, verse 5, page 306. In this very verse, Krishna says, three things you must never give up. Yajna, Dana, Tapa. Yajna means all kinds of prayers, rituals fall under Yajna. Yajna does not only mean fire sacrifice, it means all types of prayers and rituals. Second thing he says, Dhanam, acts of charity. And third is Tapa. Tapa means acts of austerity. We keep fast or whatever self-denial we practice. All these three things, Krishna says, must never be given up. And why must they never be given up? Because he says in this very verse, Pavanani Manishinam. They are the very purifiers of all human beings. These three acts will purify you. Therefore, we should not give up. What the Bhagavad Gita is saying, don't give up. But what the Bhagavad Gita is emphasizing, have the right attitude. When you do the prayers, have the right attitude. Give charity, have the right attitude. Keep austerities, have the right attitude. And what is that right attitude? He already explained in chapter 17. How to do the right way, yajna, dana, tapa. The sattvic way of doing yajna, dana, tapa was elaborately explained in chapter 17. So, you should not get the misconception that just because you have knowledge, just because you come to this knowledge, that you should give up. You should do the rituals, but two things you have to keep in mind. Number one, we should not totally engage in rituals and forget the knowledge part. So we should find some time to reduce the rituals, not completely, but some of it, and slowly move towards knowledge. Find some time for knowledge, number one. Number two, correct your attitude of the rituals that you are doing. This is very important. So do not have this wrong notion that we can give up all rituals. No, he says here very clearly, Na tyajam, do not ever give up these three things. Yajna, dana, tapa. So I hope this is very clear, because I think the brother who asked the question is not here, but I hope he hears the recording, so he'll get the answer also. Okay, having said that, let us come back to our chapter of today. We are going to start a new chapter, chapter 11, which is called Vibhuti Yoga. Chapter 10, which is called Vibhuti Yoga. And this is a very practical chapter, a chapter which we can find, we can put into practice. So, in order to, before we go into this chapter, let us just go back to the last verse of chapter 9. Then we'll see the connection with this chapter. In verse 34 of chapter 9, two things are very important in that last verse. The first thing Krishna said, fix your mind on me. So that's one thing, we will discuss this. Fix your mind on me. What happens when we fix our mind on Lord? The last instruction, if you see in English, in the English text, you shall come to me. So hence, if you start by fixing your mind on the Lord, what is the end result? You will come to me. Now, therefore, the first question we have to ask ourselves, what do we mean by fixing our mind on the Lord? And most of us, the majority of us, how do you fix your mind on the Lord? Prayers. Doing japa. And generally, even when you do japa or do prayers, you are fixing your mind on a form of Lord. A form of Lord. be it Ganesha, Shiva, Krishna, whatever it is. When you go to the temple and pray, it is also a particular form of Lord. So what the scriptures are trying to do here, they are saying it is okay to start with a form of Lord, but then you should progress to not formless. Formless is still one more step beyond. There is an intermediary stage. One is fix your mind on a form of Lord. The higher stage is the formless. But before you can even come to the formless, there is an intermediary stage which is called what? Aneka Rupa. Trying to fix your mind on any form of Lord. So when here Lord Krishna says, fix your mind on me, which is connected to the next chapter 10, in that he is going to tell us 70 over examples in creation, in nature, by which you can slowly elevate, and that same God that you worship in one particular form, we must now train our mind, elevate our mind to see God everywhere. Then only we can come to the third stage, which is the formless. So when he says, fix your mind on me, means that next chapter is going to explain to us how to broaden our vision of God. And then when he says, you shall come to me, that means what? Come to the unmanifest. That unmanifest will be explained later in chapters 13 to 18. So that unmanifest will be beautifully explained in 13 to 18. That means we are not ready yet to come to that. So first we should expand our mind to see God in everything in creation. And that's why we come to the chapter 10, which is called Vibhuti Yoga. Vibhuti itself means manifestations of the Lord. And these manifestations of the Lord, Lord is everywhere. So basically he is manifesting everywhere. This is what we have to understand. You see, Vibhuti also is when we light the joss stick. The ashes that you get, what do you call that? That is called Vibhuti. Now, what does it mean? It's a very allegorical meaning. Before you light the joss stick, can you see the Vibhuti? No. It is only after you light the joss stick that you see the Vibhuti. So what does this mean? So that means lighting the joss stick is knowledge, right? Plain fire represents knowledge. Only when you understand that God is all pervading, then the unmanifest God, like the Vibhuti, is there in the joss stick. It is not that the Vibhuti appeared from somewhere. It was there in the joss stick. But after you lit it, it showed His presence. So when you have a knowledge of Lord, that Lord is all pervading, then only you can see that Lord is everywhere in the universe. And he gave us some examples in chapter 7. He said, I'm in the water, I'm in the moon. And then he also said in chapter 9, I'm in the rain, etc., etc., I'm in the earth. And now in chapter 11, 10, he is going to expand the various manifestations that we can realize Him in this creation. So having understood this, now let us get into the text of chapter 10. Now, the theme of chapter 10, 11 is the same as what we started from chapter 7. What is the central theme of chapter 7? What is the central theme? What is, okay, knowledge or what? Para and apara prakriti. That is totality, knowing Lord in totality is having knowledge of para and apara prakriti. And what was earlier described in the initial stage, Lord is presented to us as a Jagat Karana. Jagat Karana means what? He is the very cause of the whole creation. So what did Lord say in chapter 2? He is the cause of the creation, and the creation consists of two components. One is the para prakriti, the higher nature, mixed together with the apara prakriti, which is the higher nature is what? Consciousness. consciousness mixed with lower nature, which is matter, is the whole creation. So, what were the common features between consciousness and matter? If you recall, in chapter 7, we discussed this. There are some common features and there are some uncommon features between consciousness and matter. What is the common feature between consciousness and matter? What is the common feature? The common feature is both consciousness and matter are eternal. That is, they were there right from the beginning of creation. So both matter and consciousness are eternal. That is a common feature. What is the uncommon feature between consciousness and matter? Consciousness is not subject to change, whereas matter is subject to change because matter evolves into the whole creation. So that is one difference. Secondly, consciousness is free from all attributes and properties. Consciousness does not have shape, size, color, etc. Whereas matter has got all the properties. It has got shape, size, color, etc. It has properties and therefore it is available for our perception. We can see. We can see the creation, but you cannot see consciousness. Third is, consciousness is independent. It is not dependent on matter, whereas matter is dependent on consciousness. For consciousness to be alive, for matter to be alive, it needs consciousness. But consciousness can exist without matter. Simple example, gold can exist without ornaments, but ornaments cannot exist without the presence of gold. So even when ornaments are destroyed, gold still exists. So this is the difference between consciousness and matter. Now therefore, this whole creation for us to understand is presented to us in three levels for us to understand. That is what the scriptures present. At the very first level, to understand God, the scriptures say He is the creator of the whole world. He is the intelligent creator. So how is this intelligent creator presented to you? This is at a very basic level for us to understand God. We say He is supreme, He is mighty, He has created the whole universe, planets, sun, stars, everything, human beings. So how is this God presented to you? As an intelligent person, how is the presentation of God given to you? Perfect, yeah, but how is it presented to you? How is he, okay, when you go to the temple, how does this God appear? Many hands means why? He can create everything. He has so many hands to create everything. Many heads means what? He is the most intelligent. Because to create the whole universe with that diversity, our intelligence is of no use. It has to be somebody with a super intelligence. So this is how God is presented. And then we are told that God sits in Vaikuntha or God is in Kailasha. So God is available somewhere. That is in the initial stage how God is presented. In the Upanishads, this is called Nimitta Karanam. Nimitta Karanam, N-I-M-I-T-T-A, Nimitta Karanam means intelligent creator. He is an intelligent creator. Okay? Now, when we come to the next level, the second level, when our mind becomes more mature from learning the scriptures, now we understand that actually God is infinite, isn't it? So when we say God is infinite, then how can He be at one place? He must be everywhere. That is the first thing. Second thing, for God to create this world, where did the material come from? Because if you look at anything now in creation, if a carpenter wants to create a wooden table, where does he get the material? He takes from the tree, he takes the wood from the tree. If the goldsmith wants to create ornaments, he has to go and take the gold. So the material has got to come from somewhere, right? But in the beginning there was only God. So where did the matter, where did the material come from? From where? Crossification of the consciousness. That means how can something come out of nothing? Consciousness has got no attributes, no size, no color, no shape. How can that which has no attributes suddenly become with attributes? How can something come out of nothing? Somebody said spider. Yeah, there are three examples. There are three examples given to us in the Mundaka Upanishad to help us understand how can something come out of nothing. So one example is, how does the spider create the web? He's from within himself. He doesn't have to go out and take some material and create something, right? So that's one example. Second example is how the seed becomes a tree. Third example is how the hair comes out from the skin. So with that we can understand there is a possibility that something can come out of nothing. So therefore now God does not only become the intelligent creator, Nimitta Karanam, He also becomes a matter for creation. That is called Upadana Karanam. That means now God is the intelligent creator and He is also the matter also, both He is. So that is the second level now we understand God. So therefore, when we, in the first level, when we ask where does God exist, the scriptures will say God is in Vaikuntha, God is in Kailasha. But now we come to this understanding that God is the intelligent and the material cause of the creation. Now the question we ask is, therefore where is this God? Where is this God? He is everywhere in creation. Because He is the intelligent cause and He is also the matter. Right? Like the gold has become the ornaments, the waves, the ocean has become the waves, the clay has become various pots. So clay is in the pot, gold is in the ornament, God is in the creation. He is both the intelligent and the material cause of the creation. Now this is the second stage. So when we come to the second stage, we will never ask where is God. God is in the moon, God is in the sun, God is in the water, God is in the mountains. He is everywhere. Now, therefore, how do I worship God at that second stage? I can worship God as the sun, I can worship God as a tree, I can worship God as the moon, I can worship God as anything. That is the second level. But that's not enough. Now we come to the third level now. What is the third level? The third level is God has not become the creation. He has projected Himself as the creation. The world is a projection of God. That means what? God appears as the universe. That's why the saying is there, Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithyam. So God has not become the universe, He appears as the universe. That is the final, the highest stage. But for us to understand that is not very easy. So that's why that third stage is only explained in the Bhagavad Gita in the last six chapters, 13 to 18. So we will not touch that now until we understand the second stage first. Okay? Which is to see God in everything in creation. So now, once we understand and we have this vision of God that He is the intelligent and the material cause and we can worship Him in anything in creation, that is called Vishva Rupa Darshanam. Now the world does not change. It is not that suddenly the world changes. What has changed? It is your perception of the world. Just like if you take an apple and you go to the market, you buy an apple, you call it a Don't worry, it's not a trick question. What do you call it? Apple, right? It's a fruit, right? But you take this very same apple and you go to the temple and you offer it to the Lord. Then when you take it back, you call it what? Has the apple changed?
No.
What has changed? Your perception of the very same apple. So therefore, the world is not going to change. It is our inner perception. That is the saying in Sanskrit, Yatha Drishti, Tatha Srishti. Yatha Drishti means as our inner vision, what we think of the world, what we think of God, what is our concept of God, if that changes, that Drishti, then the world also changes for us. We can see God everywhere. That is the greatest advantage if we can change our inner vision. And chapter 11 is very practical because it is going to give us 70 over examples for us as a starter, but you can also expand those examples into anything you want. Right?
Perception and attitude are the same.
I guess if your perception changes, your attitude also changes, right? Your perception changes, your attitude too. Like your perception of a person, if you have a bad perception about him, your attitude of that person also is negative. But if your perception of the person changes, then your attitude also changes also. Okay. So what is the greatest advantage when we realize that God is in everything in creation? When we say everything means good also is there, bad also is there, rain also is there, hurricane also is there, isn't it? If he's there in the lightning, he's also there in the earthquake also, because we say he's everywhere. So what is the greatest advantage we have that when we see all the glories as glories of the Lord? What is the greatest advantage we have? When everything glorious I see, a sunrise, a rainbow, a bird, anything so beautiful, so glorious, immediately reminds me of God. What is the greatest advantage we have?
Oneness.
With what glory I have, whose glory is it then? If I have humility, if I have knowledge, if I have compassion, all these glories are whose glories? God's glory. So we will never feel proud. Number two, if we see glories in others, people are honest, people are, this person has compassion, whose glories are those? Glories of God. So I'll never feel envious, I'll never feel jealous. If we understand that all glories are actually glories of God, we have no glories at all. So there is no ego. Other people have no glories also. There is no envy. Everything is nothing but God, the glories of God. Negative also, that's why it needs a very developed mind to even see that glories of God even in the negative also. But that's why if you notice, initially he doesn't give you many negative glories. He gives you a lot of positive glories. Like to see God in a cockroach is very difficult, right? But to see God in elephant, easier. But ultimately we have to come to that stage when in everything there is God. Positive also, negative also. In health also there is God, in sickness also there is God. In victory there is God, in defeat also there is God. The presence of God is there. So we have to slowly cultivate that development. And that is what is called Vibhuti Yoga. That's why this chapter is called Vibhuti. The manifestations of the Lord and how we unite with Him through His glories and His manifestations. So now let us look at verse number 1 with this understanding. Here Krishna speaks. He says to Arjuna, you are very dear to me, you are very dear to me. Because why? To find a devotee like Arjuna also very difficult, isn't it? Right? Why Arjuna is such a great devotee? He totally surrendered to Lord. Right? He could have run away from the battlefield. He could have said, Lord, I don't want to fight this. I don't want to listen to you also. I run away. But he totally surrendered to Lord for his guidance. So Krishna is saying, you are a very rare devotee. Many people say good gurus are hard to find. some people should also know, good students also difficult to find, isn't it? Because not everybody wants to listen to stories of the Lord or glories of the Lord. So with this attitude of Arjuna, Krishna is pleased. So what does he say? He says, "Hey Mahabaho." He addresses Arjuna as Mahabaho, meaning mighty arm. So he's saying, just like you have come to this battlefield prepared with all kinds of weapons, you have armed yourself to come and win this battle, in that way also I find the qualities in you that you are well prepared to hear this discourse of mine also. So the student also has to come with a prepared mind. You must have certain qualities also, a certain prepared mind to hear about the glories of the Lord. It is not easy sitting down here 1.5 hours listening to me blabbering away. For me it's very easy to talk, but to put your attention for 1.5 hours is not easy. It needs a very prepared mind. So Arjuna has this. So he says, "Hey Mahabaho, you have that. You come, you are well prepared to listen to my discourse." Now he says, "Bhuya eva," once again I'm going to give you this knowledge. And why once again? He says, once again, that's what he says. Here once again. Because last week's Gita lesson, this week everybody forgets. So everything has got to be repeated. And especially when something is very important, then how do you reinforce that point? By repetition, by repetition. That's why Krishna is saying, this is a very important point, I have to repeat it again. Which he has told in chapter 7, he has told in chapter 9, but he says, again I am repeating for your. Now, why is he repeating? And what is he repeating this knowledge? It is about the Ishvara Swarupa Jnana. It is about the knowledge about the nature of God. The first 6 chapters concentrated on Jiva Swarupa, our nature of our Jiva. The middle 6 chapters concentrate on Ishvara Swarupa, what is the nature of God. So here he is saying, I am going to repeat to you, and what is that? He says, so paramam vacha, srunu means to listen. Listen to what? Paramam vacha. Vacha means words, paramam means supreme words. And why are these words the most supreme words? Why are these words that Krishna is going to speak about the supreme? Because it deals with the absolute reality, the highest truth. That's why he calls it, listen to my supreme words. It is not ordinary knowledge, it is knowledge about that supreme. And why is he speaking to Arjuna? He says, yat aham, which I am about to vakshyami, which I am going to speak to you. The reason why I am speaking to you these same words is because priyamanaya, very important quality of the devotee also to have. Priyamanaya, because as I said before, not everybody is interested to listen to this knowledge. So there must be some love for God, there must be some devotion for God. Then only you are interested to hear all this knowledge about God. So one who doesn't have this attachment to God, this love for God, this devotion to God, will not be at all interested. But Krishna says, priyamanaya, because you are so interested, you have that love and devotion for me that you are interested to listen to this. That's why I'm imparting to you. That's why if you remember, at the end of chapter 18, Krishna said, this knowledge should not be spoken to which type of people? You should not waste your time talking to people about this knowledge. And he mentioned the type of people there in verse number 67, page 333, chapter 18. Chapter 18, verse 67, page 333. Never is this to be spoken by you, that means this knowledge that Krishna has imparted to Arjuna, by you to one who is not as austere, who does not keep austerities, who does not practice some self-discipline, number one. Nor to one who has no devotion to Lord. Number three, nor to him who desires not to listen, not interested to listen, why are you wasting your time? Nor yet to him who speaks ill of me. Therefore, one who has no devotion, no love for Lord, then there is no, it is pointless to talk to them about this knowledge. So, Priya Manaya, because you are my favorite disciple, because you are eager to hear about me. In fact, Arjuna himself will say in verse number 18 of this chapter, if you go to verse number 18, page 188, chapter 10, verse 18, page 188. He tells Krishna, tell me once more in detail your power of yoga and your glories, all your divine manifestations. Why? Because I know of no satiety in hearing your nectar-like words. No matter how much you keep telling me about yourself, I still find I am hungry, I am thirsty for to hear more and more and more. Such a devotee is Arjuna. So he has already heard in chapter 7 some glories. He has heard in chapter 9 some more glories. But yet he says, please tell me more and more in detail. So, yeah, sorry.
Huh.
He could have what? Save? That's the end part of the Mahabharata. He is unable to save all his women and all that through.
No.
There is a long story behind that, isn't it? Won't go into that now. There's a long story here. Okay, so now, no matter, so such a devotee is Arjuna, who is still unsatisfied. The more and more he hears, he still wants to hear more and more. So Priya Manaya, that's why I am imparting this knowledge to you again. And not only that, there's a second reason also. Why? Why do we want to study this knowledge? Why do we want to know about the glories of Lord? There must be some reason, there must be some goal, some objective. So here he says, hita kamyaya yat, that which will be for your benefit, which will be for your welfare. Krishna is not just blabbering about his glories, like, you know, you ask somebody, what is the good things that you have done? They will tell you 10, 20, 30 things. Why? It's to feed their own ego. But here Krishna doesn't need to feed his ego. He's saying, I'm telling you my divine manifestations. If you understand my glories, my origin, it is for your benefit. What is your benefit? So what does he mean by it will come to your benefit? It will lead you to moksha. It will lead you to liberation. So important is his knowledge. So important it is for us to know about the divine glories of Lord and his origin also. That means about the, eventually come to the higher nature of Lord. So, it will be for your own benefits. So, having explained the glory of this knowledge, the reason why we should pay attention, that's why he says, Runu, pay your close attention to what I'm about to tell you. Now, he introduces that knowledge about Ishvara Jnana, the very nature of Ishvara. Now, who better to tell you the origin of God? God himself, isn't it? Like if you ask, who better to tell about the origin of your own father? Only your father can tell you of his own origins. Because why? We all came later. So, who was there right at the beginning of creation? Only Lord. So, Lord is saying now, better you hear it directly from me, rather than you hear it from different sources. I myself am going to tell you about my own origin. So first of all he says, Suragana. Suragana means all the devas, all the gods. And cha, they do not know. They do not know my origin. Prabhava means the very origin, the very source. So, Suragana and also who else? Maharishi, even the great sages, no matter how much evolved they were, even they cannot know my origin. Now, neither do the gods, neither do the sages will ever be able to know about my origin. Why is that? Why is it that the gods and even the great rishis also cannot know about God's origin?
actually beyond them.
Because even the devas are also finite creatures, isn't it? They also have a finite time. They were created by God, then they had a finite time, and then they have to come back to earth again. So all of us were devas at one time, probably, never know. Right? We enjoy certain pleasures in heaven, but then we have to come back here. So devas also change. All the devas are not permanent. Even Indra also is not permanent. Indra also changes. So if that devas were created by God, they also will never know the origin of God. And even the Maharishi, so here he says, why they don't know my origin? Because Aham Adi, I am the very source. I am the very cause, I am the very creation of all the devas and the Maharishis. So since I am the cause and they have finite existence and Lord only is infinite, only He can tell you His own origins. So now He says, what type of knowledge is going to give? Sarvasaha. The word Sarvasaha here means in all respects, meaning I am going to tell you about myself as the intelligent cause and also as the material cause. So this is what He is going to reveal now. So now let us go into the third verse now. Now, so he is pointing to that person who gets a knowledge of Lord. What is that? That very Lord, the highest knowledge which we should attain. Okay? So if the person applies his intellect and gets a knowledge of Lord, who is the material cause and the intelligent cause of creation, who is this person? Krishna says, it is the Asammudaha. Asammuda, muda means deluded one. Asammuda means one who is not deluded. One who is very clear about the direction of life. One who is very clear about the goal of life. One who is very clear about the purpose of human birth. If we don't understand the purpose of human birth, then we will never be interested to pursue this spiritual path. So Asammuda means one who applies his intellect for searching answers to the real purpose of human life. One who has a burning desire to know. So Krishna says, Yaha Mam Veti. Yaha means he who Veti knows, Mam me, who knows me as the intelligent and the material cause of creation, as the whole cause of creation. But who is this me now? And this is very important, because every time we get this confusion, when Krishna says me, is it the Krishna me? And then some people say no, it's Shiva, some people say no, it's Ganesha. But now he is identifying who is this me. He says very clearly, I am Ajam, I am birthless, and I am Anadim, I am beginningless. There is no beginning to my nature, and I am also birthless. So therefore we have come to understand that whenever he talks about this me, he is talking about that which has no birth, which has no beginning at all. That is the highest, supreme, unmanifested, absolute God. The one creator who is without a beginning and who is birthless. And that's why in the Upanishads is very clear, God is defined as the causeless cause. He is the cause of everything, but He is beyond cause. Because if you say God has a cause, if you say God had a father, what is your next question? Who is the father of God? And then it goes to grandfather and great-great-grandfather and goes on. So the Upanishads are very clear. He is the causeless cause. So here he says also, I am birthless. There is no cause for my birth. He is the only thing that existed in the beginning of creation. So Lord has no parents. Whereas Krishna had parents, Rama had parents, Ganesha had parents. But here he is the causeless cause, without birth. And who is he? Loka Maheshwara. Maha Ishwara. Maha is great, Ishwara is Lord. He is the great Lord of what? Loka, of all the worlds. When we say all the worlds, means what? All the 14 worlds, all the 14 lokas, right from hell all the way up to heaven, including earth also. So he is the lord of all the 14 lokas. He is the lord of the devas, the asuras, and also the human beings. Therefore, he is the creator. He is known as the Srishti, Sthiti, Laya. Srishti means creator, Sthiti means preserver, Laya means the destroyer. All the three he is. Dissolution. And one who understands Lord in this capacity, that he is birthless, that he is beginningless, that he is the cause of this whole creation, Krishna says, he among mortals, saha marteshu, marteshu means among all the mortals, what becomes of him? Sarva pape pramuchyate. Pramuchyate means he becomes free from all papa, all types of sins, if he understands my highest nature. Now, again, we have to understand what he means by becomes free of all sins. So, I have explained this also before, that all other types of rituals you do, you go and bathe in the Ganga, you do all kinds of fasting, you do all kinds of prayers, all kinds of tapas you do, can only remove certain amount of sins. Whereas here he is saying that the greatness of this knowledge of knowing Lord as the Absolute can remove all your sins. Meaning what? Meaning the sins that you were born with, which is known as the prarabdha karmas, you will be also free of this. What does it mean you will be free of this, the prarabdha karmas? Because sins affect us in three ways. One is the sins which we are born with as prarabdha karmas. So even though we have this knowledge of God, it does not mean that adverse situations are moved away from our life. We will face them. But when I have the knowledge of God, I am not affected anymore by this, what we call the ups and downs of life. So prarabdha karmas don't affect me anymore. And once I have this knowledge of God, then my actions from this day onwards become pure. Which means the second part of sin does not affect me, and that is called agami karmas. My agami karmas also become pure. And if your agami karmas become pure and your prarabdha karmas do not affect you, then the sanchita karmas, the warehouse of karmas, is burnt away by God. So if you don't have prarabdha karmas, when the body comes to an end, prarabdha karmas come to an end, you have not accumulated any new agami karmas, and Lord by His grace has burnt away your sanchita karmas, there is no more cause for you to come back to a rebirth. So that's what he means by, if you only have this knowledge, if you understand my higher nature, you will be free of all sins. So powerful is his knowledge, so great is his knowledge, that just with knowledge it can take you to moksha. So he is telling us the importance of this knowledge. All the papams will be destroyed. And now he explains to us from verse 4 onwards, what is God's nature. Now he said he is the lord of all the worlds, all the 14 lokas. But now we must understand that Lord is not only the lord of all the gross manifestation we see, but what else? One is the gross manifestation. We see Lord in the sun, in the moon, in the hill, in the stars, etc. But since he says, I am the lord of all the worlds, meaning what? The subtle also, your thoughts, your emotions, he is also the cause of, he is the lord of that also. So now he is going to give us, in verses 4 and 5, 20 subtle emotions that we all go through, and this is again a sample. So he is telling you that even when you are experiencing all these qualities, they are also coming from the Lord. So even the gross world he is the lord of, even the subtle world he is the lord of. Even the manifest world he is the lord of, even the unmanifest also he is the lord of. He is the lord of all, external and internal. So what are the internal thoughts or our internal qualities that we have that he is the lord of? That means all this that we are experiencing is the nothing but the manifestations of the Lord. So what are the things? Buddhi, the first thing is buddhi. This discrimination, this power of discrimination, which is given to who? Only human beings. It's a very important gift that is given, which is very underutilized nowadays, isn't it? Because people don't want to use their intellect. They are very happy leading their life with their minds. What is the difference with mind and intellect? Mind is likes and dislikes. Intellect is discrimination, means right or wrong. That is discrimination. If you lead your life with your mind, you give in to your likes and dislikes. But if you lead your life with your intellect, then you will lead a life, you know the difference between right and wrong. So Krishna says that intellect, if you use it, that is also my manifestation. So recognize that if you use the power of the intellect, it is a very glory, it is a very manifestation of the Lord in you. So that is the beauty of the intellect. If you use it, it can prevent us from going on the wrong path. And all of us have been gifted with this intellect. The problem is whether you want to use it or not. And because of this buddhi, another quality arises. Here he says, jnanam. Jnanam is the knowledge. Because with the intellect, we can attain knowledge. We use the intellect, we can attain the right knowledge. Of course, intellect also can be of three types. You can have a tamasic intellect, a rajasic intellect, and a sattvic intellect, which is explained in chapter 18. So the wrong intellect also can take you in the wrong direction. But here he is talking about that intellect which is used for the right purposes, to acquire jnanam, the right jnanam, pure knowledge. Then what else? Asam moha. Moha is delusion. Asam moha is non-delusion. When we are not deluded by life, when we understand perfectly the object of life, the objective of this human birth, and where are we going to get this knowledge? From the scriptures, from the gurus, from the swamis. They are all there to give us this knowledge, to tell us, to wake us up from this delusion that we are all under. Because from birth itself, we've been told to pursue material things. The more material, how does society judge people? How much wealth you have, how many cars you have, what is your bank balance, how many businesses you have. That is good. It is not that it is bad. But then we do not develop our spiritual side. So here asam moha is to get out of this delusion, the state of delusion, that the purpose of human life is only to pursue wealth and enjoyment. So when that non-delusion is in you, it is also the glory or the manifestation of the Lord. Another very important quality, kshama, patience, forgiveness. And when is this kshama very, very important? Or when does it come in use? It's very easy to be forgiving when nothing is happening, isn't it? So when should we have this quality? We should practice this quality. When what? When somebody is insulting you, when somebody is abusing you, when somebody is saying wrong things about you, then to develop or have this quality of kshama or forgiveness is very, very important. But then people say, what happened? People hit you. Should also forgive? Get slapped on the left cheek, slap back on the right cheek. Then where is this kshama, this forgiveness? If you are physically abused, should you also give forgiveness? Yes? Also forgive. You should not defend yourself. See, Ramakrishna Paramahansa gave a very beautiful answer to this. He was asked this question. Supposing somebody comes to attack me, should I not protect myself and say, okay, you also Atman, I'm also Atman, whack me, it doesn't matter. So Ramakrishna gave a very beautiful story to explain this. He said, in a village, there was a snake, very poisonous snake. And you all heard this story?
Yes.
All of you heard, so I don't go into the story. No. How many have not heard? Okay, fine. So there was in this village a very poisonous snake. And the villagers used to be scared to go to this part of the village because the snake would attack them. So one day to this village came a divine saint. He came to the village and he wanted to go to this particular part where the snake was living to sit down and meditate. And all the villagers told him, don't go there. You go there, you'll be attacked by the snake. So better don't go there. It's very poisonous. He said, never mind. I know what to do. I know how to handle it. So he went there, he sat down and he started meditating. And the snake came, wanted to attack this sage. The sage opened his eyes and he realized, he communicated with the snake because he had the divine powers. And he asked him, why are you attacking all these people? Because he had a lot of anger in him, carried forward from past life. So he had to show off his anger, you know. So he says, you are scaring all these people. It's better I give you a mantra, you recite this mantra and you will be able to cool your anger down and thus you won't have to attack all these people. So the snake was very happy. The sage gave him the mantra and he went off. 1 year later he came and he saw the same villagers. He said, where is the snake? They said, 1 year we have not seen the snake. Now we go to that part of the where the snake was, we are not attacked at all by the snake. So the sage went looking for the snake, saw the fellow hiding behind one stone, shivering away. So the sage asked him, what is your problem? He said, you told me not to attack those fellows. They are throwing sticks and stones on me. I am running here, running there, trying to save myself. Now I am hiding behind rocks here and there. You have made my life totally miserable. So the sage told him, I told you not to attack them. Not to attack them. But when they attack you, at least what you should do? Hiss, at least make them scared. You don't have to put your venom into them. You don't have to inject your venom. But at least show your strength, your power and make them run away. So that means what? You have to show your aggressiveness, show your anger, but don't inject your venom into people. Don't have that hatred in your mind. Just like a guru scolds a student, not with hatred and anger, he scolds with love. Just like a mother scolds a child, not with hatred and anger, but scolds with love. So show that anger, but inside remain with love. So therefore, we must not mistake here the quality of forgiveness that we don't defend or we don't protect ourselves. If you need to, you have to protect and defend yourself. But do it without injecting venom into people. That you wish for their destruction, that you have all kinds of evil thoughts about them and all that. So kshama means that what we call patience, forgiveness when we are being abused or insulted. Another quality he gives us is satyam, truthfulness. And truthfulness is not only at verbal level, because many people know how to speak truth with the words, but in the mind they are thinking something else. So truthfulness is at mental level, verbal level, and leading a truthful life also, physical level also. So truthfulness must be practiced at all levels. That is also a manifestation of divinity in us. Another quality is dhamma. Dhamma means control of your external organs, your senses, your eyes, your ears, etc. And this dhamma together with the next quality, sama, is a very, very, two very important qualities to progress on the spiritual path. Because if we don't have discipline of our senses, again, we will lead a undisciplined life. We just run to where our senses like to see this, like to hear that, hear the wrong things, like to see the wrong things. We must have some discipline and control over our external senses. That is called dhammaha. And then that is not enough. Dhammaha, there is also samaha, which means control of your mind. Be very alert. Know where your mind is going, because it's in a split second. Now you're sitting here. I don't know how many of you are listening to me. Many people already would have been, have their mind jumping somewhere else already. So it's very easy to lose that mind. The mind goes off very fast everywhere. So be very conscious, be very alert where your mind is going. That is called samaha, control of your mind. Have that discipline. So earlier, in fact in chapter 2, Krishna spoke to us about how to control the senses. Remember that example he gave us of the tortoise? That when he sees danger, what does the tortoise do? Withdraw under the protection of his shell. So, whenever you see people standing there gossiping, don't go there. When you see people seeing the wrong thing, don't go there and join them. have that, what we call that energy or that effort to stay away, to keep your senses away from the wrong things. And then again, when your senses are not exposed to anything, the problem is what? That relish also exists in the mind. So learn to discipline and control the mind. And how do you control the mind? By diverting the mind away to higher thoughts. So don't suppress the mind. That is the most dangerous thing you can do. Don't suppress the mind. Why you shouldn't suppress the mind? One day you blow up somewhere, right? Because the thoughts are there. At the same time, don't express. So expression is dangerous, suppression is dangerous, dilution is the best solution. That's why we have mantras, that's why we have bhajans, that's why we chant various slokas. All this help us to divert. Anytime any wrong thoughts come into your mind, start singing a bhajan, start saying a mantra, keep your mind diverted as much as you can. That is called samaha, the discipline of the mind.
Women, when they are having a lot of problems, they like to tell somebody.
Okay.
By releasing all that, they feel so much better.
That is okay. There's nothing wrong. But when I say express, means like you express your anger out to somewhere, or you express whatever you're feeling in your mind out to something. Like you want to hit that person at its mental level, but then you go and really hit the person. So that's what I'm talking about, that discipline of the mind. When wrong thoughts come into your mind, you want to go to wrong places, or you want to seek the company of wrong people, that's when you should divert away your mind to other, to higher thoughts. Right? So be very careful. That's why there's this very famous episode in Ramayana. When Ravan was he lay dying on the battlefield, and then Rama was told to go and see him and get some advice from him. So when he went to see Ravan to get some advice on how to run a kingdom, because Ravan ran a very efficient kingdom and Rama had to go back and run Ayodhya. So Ravan told him, I've got two pieces of advice for you. When a good thought comes to your mind, do it immediately. When a good thought comes to your mind, don't procrastinate. Thought comes, I should give dhanam. Go and do it immediately. Thought comes, I should go for Gita class. Don't procrastinate. That is the first piece of advice. Second advice, when a woman tells you something, don't do it. Now all the women will get angry. When a woman tells you something, don't do it. But what was Ravan actually trying to tell Rama? Who is it that poisoned Ravan's mind? His sister, Surpanaka. She put all the wrong thoughts in his mind. Now look at Ravan. He is the king of Lanka. He has all the riches of Lanka, all the gold, all the food he can eat, all the beautiful maidens, everything he has. One wrong thought she come and put in his mind, you should have this lady called Sita. What happened? It poisoned his mind. Just one wrong thought. So what he is trying to tell Rama, when a wrong thought comes into your mind, leave it aside. Don't give some thought to it. Just throw it aside. Right. Yeah. She also put the wrong. Who was that servant who put the wrong thought? What was the name? Mandara. Mandara again comes from the root word man, which is mind. So it is so easy for her to poison. What is the root mind? Kaikeyi's mind. So that mandara also is all very allegorical. Actually, Raman is very allegorical if you really read it. Even the word mandara, how she poisoned Kaikeyi, mandara comes from the word mana, which means mind. Such a poisonous thought she put into her mind. So when good thoughts come, act on it fast. When bad thoughts come, procrastinate, leave it aside. Okay, what else? So dhamma sama is there. Then sukham, happiness. So when happy times come, mind is very calm, mind is very relaxed. That is also manifestation of the Lord. But he also adds in dukham. Sometimes your mind is also troubled. Sometimes there is sorrow. Sometimes there is agitation. He said that also is a manifestation of the Lord. That means good times accept as prasadam. bad times also accept as prasadam also, because both are nothing but manifestations of the Lord. We should learn to accept both sukham and dukham. And that's why when we have the capacity to accept dukham, this is another very important quality of a spiritual aspirant. To accept sukham, everybody knows how to accept. To accept dukham is a real test of a spiritual aspirant. Dukham. Sukham, dukham. So I must have the capacity to withstand both pleasure and pain, joy and sorrow. Then bhava. Bhava means birth. Many times when you are just sitting down, some thoughts come into your mind. Where are these thoughts coming from? Just you are sitting down, you know, nothing you are doing, just sitting down. Suddenly one thought comes into your mind. I want to have ice cream. Just like that one thought comes into your mind. Where is this thought coming from? Huh? Yeah, of course, from your mind. But where? What is the root cause? From your vasana, from your past. So a collection of thoughts built up becomes strong vasanas in you. You're always thinking about, you know, let's say you're thinking about ice cream, ice cream, ice cream, ice cream. That builds up as a thought that when you're sitting down, your mind is just not thinking of anything, that vasana would come out in you. That also, he says, is a manifestation of the Lord. Bhava. And abhava means dissolution of thoughts. When we go to sleep in the night, all the thoughts are dissolved. Where do they get dissolved? Into the divinity also. So the thoughts come from divinity, they dissolve back also into divinity. Then, what are the other qualities? Bhayam, fear. Now, what is it mostly that we fear? All of us have bhayam. What is it mostly that we fear? Fear of death. Do you know what is the number one cause of fear in the world? There was a survey done recently. You know what is the number one cause of fear in the world? Huh? Fear of death of a loved one.
Fear of losing everything.
Fear of losing everything. What else? Fear of death. That was the number three cause actually. Number one was what?
Failure.
Fear of flying. Fear of flying. Going in an aeroplane. That was the number one cause of fear in the world. There was a survey done, I read about it. So the number one cause of fear in the world is fear of flying. And you know, it's very strange. Also, all of us are scared of getting in the plane and flying. What do they call that airport building?
Terminal.
Can't they find a better word for it? People are already scared of flying. Somehow you call the building terminal. So, but what is it mostly that causes our fear? Unknown. Unknown is what? Unknown is the future that is not born. As Swami Chinmayananda says, our mind is either in the dead past or the unborn future. This is where our mind is running all the time, back and forth and back and forth, never in the present. Isn't it? So that is what causes our fear, our agitation. What will happen tomorrow? Will this happen? Will that happen? Will this person be with me? Will this person leave me? Isn't it? What is that? All that is unborn future. Nothing has happened. Yet we keep on worrying and worrying and worrying about it. But here he says that source of that fear is also manifestation of God Himself. So what you should do? Surrender that fear also to Lord. Surrender the future to Lord. That's what he said in chapter 2 verse 47. Karma devadikaraste. Your right is to do action. Ma paleshu kadachana. The fruit, the result is in the future. Surrender that fruit to me. Why? Because God is the law of karma, isn't it? The law of karma is designed by God. What we are to get in future, what we are not to get in future, is it in your hands? Is it whose hands? God's hands. So why are you worried about the future? You surrender that to God. So fear and both bhayam and abhayam, fearlessness, both are a manifestation of God. In fact, this abhayam, fearlessness, in chapter 16, God will give us 20 divine qualities. The very first quality of a divine person is what? Abhayam. Fearlessness. When you surrender the past and the future to God, there is no more fear in it. Why should I fear if God is here? The future also in God's hand, the past also happened because of God's hand also. So why should I have any thoughts about the past or the future? Surrender that. That is called fearlessness. That also is a manifestation of Lord. Verse 5. Sorry?
Sammoha in the first line.
Sammoha. Asammoha. Asammoha. Covered non-delusion. Just now I covered that. Asammoha. Non-delusion. Okay, verse 5. He gives some more qualities. Total 20 qualities are here. In verse 4 and 5. Which are all the internal qualities, which are also the divine manifestations of God. Okay, next quality, ahimsa. Mental attitude of non-violence. To cultivate that good thoughts, to have non-violent thoughts in our mind, not harming people, not thinking about how to bring down people, how to make other people suffer. All this is part of ahimsa. So, that also is a manifestation of the Lord when we don't have bad thoughts about people, ahimsa, especially to those who have done wrong to you. So we have to be very careful. And more thoughts you have about good thoughts about people, that means what? That is ahimsa. That means that is the very manifestation of God in you. So the more and more good thoughts you send out, all that is a inner manifestation of the divinity in you. Samatha. Samatha is equanimity. Equanimity against what? To have this tranquil mind is free from raga dvesha. The more likes and dislikes you cultivate, the more chances of your mind not being tranquil. I like this, I don't like this, I like this, I like that. You want an environment which is totally catering to your needs only. I must have, my husband must be like this, my wife must be like this, my children must behave like this. Possible or not possible? Some people say possible. So not possible, we cannot control that external environment. So samatha means I can only have equanimity when I reduce my likes and dislikes, raga dvesha. And to have that equanimity of mind, that tranquility of mind, that is again the very manifestation of the Lord in us. Tusti, contentment, very very difficult quality to have, if you have contentment. Because why is it most of the time you are not content? Why is it you are never content? Why? What's the main reason you are not content? Why do you want
to be happy with what you have?
Why? You're not getting to the root answer. You're always looking at what other people have. Isn't it? It's only when we compare that we are not content with what we have. If we don't compare, then you're content with what you have. If I'm driving my car, I'm happy. The minute I look at the other puller, oh, it's this car, then what happens? I get discontent. The minute I'm sitting down eating my food, that will order three dishes, I only have one dish, then it's gone. So never ever compare. Don't look at what your neighbors have, what your relatives have, what your friends have. Be content with what you have. Comparison is a very dangerous disease in all of us. So, tushti, contentment. Be content with what you have. What you have is given to you, you won't get more, you won't get less. What you are supposed to get, you will get. Nobody can take away what you are supposed to have. Nobody can give you more than what you are supposed to have. Because according to the law of karma, you get what you deserve, not what you desire. So understand that. That other person who's got more, he is supposed to get more. He will not get less, he will not get more. You also will not get less, you will not get more. Whatever you have is exactly what you are supposed to have. That is the law of karma. So, don't feel discontent by comparing with others. Okay? We do not know what karma they have, we do not know what karma we have. So that is Tusti, contentment. And to have that contentment is also a divine manifestation. Tapaha, austerity. Whenever we can practice any austerity. And austerity does not mean just fasting. Just because you fast means okay, that is austerity, no. Austerity means taking what is your weakness. If you have weakness for coffee, you like to drink coffee 5 times a day. What should you do? Tell yourself, one day a week I won't have coffee. That is called austerity, self-denial. So take whatever is your weakness. I like to watch TV serials 3 hours a day. You know what to do. Cut down that. So when you can have that discipline to deny yourself what you favor the most, that helps you to bring discipline into your life, that helps you bring purity into your life. Because what did Krishna say in chapter 18, just now I told you, yajna dana tapa na tyajam. Do not give up yajna dana tapa. Why? Because pavanani manishinam, they purify us. So the more you can practice austerities, the more you get purified. Take a list of the things that you are so addicted to that you cannot live without. And then at least once a week, cut that out of your system. And see how you can tolerate it. So that is called tapaha, practicing austerity. And that austerity must be also at all 3 levels. Speech level, don't simply say whatever you feel like saying. If you like to use abusive words, foul words, learn to control that. So physical level, mental level, and what is it called? Physical level, speech level, and mental level, at all 3 levels. We must practice austerity. All these 3 types of austerities also are explained in chapter 18. Okay, what is physical austerity, what is mental austerity, what is vocal austerity. So that is tapaha. Then dana, attitude of charity. Wherever you can, always have thoughts of how to help people. And charity does not only mean giving money. That is not charity. That is not the only charity. How else can you give charity? Time, give your time. Somebody is in hospital, just go and sit down and talk to them. That is dhanam. What else? Sharing knowledge with people, that is dhanam. Giving clothes to somebody, that is dhanam. There are many ways to practice charity. So don't only think about charity as giving money. There are many ways. Even listening, like what sister said, when somebody has problems in their mind, they come and sit down and they talk to you. That listening also is a form of dana. You are giving up your time. That also is a form of dana. So when you have this attitude of charity, that also is a manifestation of the law. Yasaha. Yasaha is when people praise you. You feel very nice, isn't it? So, when people say you are so handsome, you are so beautiful, you are so nice, what should you do? So all the glories are, what I said earlier, glories of the Lord only. All the good things in you are not yours, they belong to the Lord. So the minute you receive, don't get carried away. Thank the Lord. Say these are your glories. Somebody praises you for your knowledge, for your intelligence or whatever, these are your glories, Lord. Yesaha. And then there are times when people will also, ayesaha, will insult you. That also, surrender it to the Lord. So you take care of it. So praises also, insults also, surrender it to the Lord. Why? Because of the law of karma, you were supposed to get these praises, you were also supposed to get this insult. And most of the time you will find, actually, not bad people get insulted. It is a good people who get insulted. Isn't it? Because why, you know, they say there's a saying. If a black cloth, there is a white mark, a small white dot, would you notice it? You don't notice it. But in a white cloth, there is a black mark, you notice it straight away. Which means what? A good person can do good for the whole of his life. He does one thing wrong, everybody will jump on him. Right? But a bad person has been doing bad all his life. He does another 10 more bad things, people say, he's like that only, what can you do? Isn't it? So it is mainly the good people who get insulted more, and that's why it's very important, ayasaha. There will be times when people insult you, when people condemn you. Even you are doing good things. There are many people here who do seva, they get insulted. They get condemned. You know, you didn't do this correctly, you didn't do this, you should have done that. There are a lot of people who know how to give advice but not know how to help you do the work. So ayasaha. And thus Krishna says here, summing up all his qualities, bhutanam bhava. Bhutanam, of all the living beings, bhava, these are the varieties or these are the various emotions that we all experience. Somehow or other, we will be swinging between these emotions, all these 20 different qualities. But what does he say? All these 20 qualities are what? Matta eva bhavanti prathak vidha. Prathak vidha, different kinds of emotions that you face, positive or negative, bhavanti, they arise from matta eva, from me alone. So understand, everything that is you are experiencing in your mind at the mental level are also nothing but manifestations of the Lord. Prathak vidha. Therefore, what Krishna is saying, I am the Lord of all. In verses 4 and 5, he has told us about the internal qualities. Now, in verses 6 onwards, he is going to tell us about the external creation. So, because he says, I am the Lord of all means everything, external and internal, manifest and unmanifest. So, now he has told us about the internal qualities. Now, from verse 6 onwards, he is going to speak about the external qualities. So here he starts talking about the very creation, the very dawn of creation. How did creation come about?
I have a question.
Yeah.
In this verse now, he is talking about non-violence, equanimity, contentment, prosperity. These are all positive things.
Also negative things are there.
No, but there is only one, fame and
ill. In fame, yes.
So that's the only negative.
Right.
Why?
Well, it's basically he's just showing you both sides of the point. He's showing you that both can happen. That fame also can happen, and to you, the same person, in fame also can happen. That means
the opposite of non-violence is violence.
Violence also. That means if violence arises in you, the source of that, the consciousness, that's why he'll say in chapter 11, or is it chapter 10, I am the intelligence in gambling. There must be some intelligence required to gamble also. So that intelligence in gambling also, he is the very source. So we have to understand that the consciousness is there, but how we use that equipment, that depends on us. So he is there giving life to the mind, to the intellect, but how we use it, that depends on us. But if positive feelings arise in us, that's why he's given us more positive feelings, then those are all the manifestations of the Lord. Negative here is when we face adverse comments from people, we must also understand our mind goes through some turbulence. This also is a manifestation of the Lord. So we should accept both positive and negative. But as I said, to accept negative requires a more refined mind. It's not easy. We can accept the positive, but to accept the negative requires a more refined mind. So slowly we have to come to that. Just like we can love our friends and relatives, but to love our enemies is very difficult. To see God in our enemies, so it will take some time. So now we come to verse number 6. I think we don't have time. So any other questions? We have only 5 more minutes left. Any questions so far? Yes. There is no Satan per se, like one particular Satan, but we do have varieties of asuras and demons, etc. And basically, all these stories about the asuras, demons, are basically a representation of the very negative qualities in us. So that's what we have to understand. The more and more we go away from God, the more negative qualities we develop. And they will increase and increase and increase, and more we go away. So, to have bad thoughts means what? We are further and further away from God. Just like light is there all the time. But when will you experience darkness? The more and more you move away from light. So, evil is basically moving away from Lord. Divine qualities are basically moving towards God. And this... Sorry? Yeah, I mean, there is no one Satan. In fact, if you look at chapter 16, if you go to chapter 16, we talk about hell there. The locusts do exist, yes. Just let me get that verse. Okay, verse number 21. Chapter 16, verse 21, page 288. Here he's talking about hell. What are the triple gates to hell? Kama, Krodha, Lobha. Desire, anger, greed. These are your gateways to hell. So to become a demonic person is basically giving in to all these negative qualities. And more of the negative qualities are also explained in this very same chapter 16. If you look at verse number 4, page 281. Here he's talking about the demoniac qualities. Those who are people of demonic nature. What are their qualities? Hypocrisy, arrogance, pride, anger, harshness. So these are qualities in us that make us demonic. And the representation of these rakshasas are just a representation of the demonic qualities in us. So we can be the rakshasas or the asuras depending on the type of demonic qualities we have. Okay.
So Ravana was
well, he had all the, he had ego, he had, yeah, he had all those qualities. He all did it was one wrong thought to spark him off to his own destruction. So that's why it's all very allegorical. Read the Ramayana and understand the allegorical meaning here. Okay? We will stop now and resume next. Yes, you have a question. Actually, Sanatana Dharma is the name of our religion. And what is Sanatana Dharma? Dharma is a righteous conduct. Sanatana is eternal. Eternal righteous conduct. Which means if we follow this path of Sanatana Dharma and purify ourselves, ultimately we reach moksha. So the word Hinduism actually should not exist. It should be actually what we should call our religion is Sanatana Dharma, because every life we are improving. We are given a chance to improve ourselves, to follow the dharmic path. That's why the very first word of Bhagavad Gita starts with Dharma. Dharma is the very first word. That is the whole purpose of the Gita, to show us a dharmic life. The prayer Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kansa Chanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru. Thank you for your
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.